Tov, and for Parshas Chukas, we're taking a look in Perek Chaf. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor, kach es hamate vakel es ha'edo. This is the famous or infamous Parsha of Mei Meriva, in which Moshe Rabbeinu is commanded to gather together the people, together with Aaron, the Dibartem el Asela, etc., etc. And Vayikach Moshe Samatem Lifnei Hashem Kasher Tzivom. Now the subject of our discussion today is going to be which Mate, okay? So let's take a look. It says, Vayorem Moshe Es Yodo, Vayach Es HaSela B'matehu Pahamoyim, Vayetsu Mayim Rabim Vateshev HaEda Vatesh HaEda Uve'iro. It's quite clear that, if we can just close the door, sorry, just, thank you so much. So that now it says Matehu. Okay, can keep that word in mind, because that word in the possessive would seem to indicate that we're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu's mata. Okay, we don't know which mata we're talking about, but I just want to say that in the overall evidence here, the word Mateu, his mata, as it's addressed to Moshe Rabbeinu, would seem to indicate that we're talking about Moshe's mata. And we'll get to Aaron's mata a little bit later on. Now, at the end of this entire story, this episode, in which Moshe was called upon to speak to the rock, and instead he hit the rock. So what we have here is Hema Mei Meriva Asher Ravu Vnei Yisrael Es Hashem Vayikadesh Bam. And these are the waters of quarrel, and it created a whole Meriva and Ravu Vnei Yisrael. And if you take a look at the Pasuk Vav, which you'll see towards the beginning of Parshas Chukas, it says there, V'ikisa Batsur. Now, it is a little bit confusing here, because the Parsha of Mayim, of getting water for the people, appears not once in the Torah, but twice in the Torah. Here it appears in Parshas Chukas, and it culminates in the Mei Meriva, correct? But what I'd like you to do, and you'll tell me what page it is in the Chumash, is open up to Shmos Perek Yudzayin, if you have such a thing. If somebody could be kind enough to tell me what page it's on, Shmos Perek Yudzayin, unless there's an extra Chumash here.
Oh. There it is. 168.
168?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. 168. So let's take a look back in Parshas Bishalach. Let's see if we can find exactly the place that we want. Here too, we have a little bit of a similar parasha. It says in Pasuk Beis on page 168, it says, Vayorev ha'am im Moshe, Vayomru tnu lanu mayim v'nishte. So here also the people of Israel are sort of quarreling with Moshe Rabbeinu, and they're demanding water. Correct?
Yeah.
And if you take a look in Pasuk Zion, it says, Vayikra Shem HaMokom Masa Umariva Al Riv B'nei Yisrael. So we have here Masa Umariva. This also indicates a certain kind of rebellion or quarreling of B'nei Yisrael. And once again, the subject is thirst and water, as is clear from Pasuk Beis, where it says, Vayorav Ha'am Im Moshe Tnu Lanu Mayim. And this is Vayitzma Sham Ha'am L'mayim Vayolen Ha'am Al Moshe. So again, what we don't find here in Parshas Bishalach is the Me Meriva. That phrase, Me Meriva, only appears here in Parshas Chukas. What we do find back in Shmos Yud Zayin is a battle, a quarrel over water as well. Okay. Now, there's one other point I wanted to make here, and that's Rashi. Rashi says that it says al atzur lo nemar el batzur mikan shamata hoya shel min dover chazak ushmo sanpirin vatzur nivka milafanim. Let's try to understand what Rashi is saying here. Every word in Rashi is important, but I think the most important is the word snapiron. Snapiron, which is not an original Hebrew word, but it's a word that's used in Lashon Kodesh, borrowed from another language, that refers to a stone, a very hard stone.
Sapphire.
Is it a sapphire? Is that what it is?
I think so.
Could be, right. It makes sense because it almost fits into the shorish of the word snapir, sapphire. Okay. Now, when you just give me a gut reaction, if you were to associate a mate, you know, a staff, what would you associate? What kind of material?
Wood.
Wood, right. And here, Rashi identifies the mate as a dover chazak. It's something very, very powerful, which, you know, there are wood that could be strong, but usually you don't identify wood as being chazak. And then Rashi says snapiron, which is the name of a stone. So you get the impression that the mate over here, which Moshe uses back in Parshas Bishalach, is made of stone. Correct? Now, this is not the first time in the Torah, and the only time in the Torah, that we're dealing with a mate. Of course, we have the mate of Moshe back in the beginning of Shmos, which he uses to, when he first appears in front of Paro, and then during the course of the Eser Makos. We have the mate again here in the context of the battle, the quarrel over water in Parshas Bishalach. So that we have. And then where else do we have the mate? But yeah, Chris, exactly, Aaron's mate. And Aaron's mate appears in Parshas Korach that we just read yesterday.
And it blossomed,
and that was the simon that Hashem chose Aaron.
And that is wood.
That was made of wood, as we'll soon see. So now, we're right now in the parasha, right after Korach, and you would think, you know, we're sort of like at a crossroads here. We have two choices. We can talk about the mate that was last mentioned, which means just a chapter ago, here in Parshas Korach, and that's the mat of whom? Of Aaron, Terach Mata Aaron. And then we can talk about an earlier mata, which goes back to the beginning of Shmos, and that's the mat of Moshe. And when we get to Parshas Chukas, which we'll call the Parsha of the Mei Meriva, and we saw the opening pasuk in the Parsha says, Kaches HaMata. So which mate is it? Is the mate of Moshe from Sefer Shmos, or is the mate of Aaron, which became so famous and so central in Parshas Korah? So we don't know which one it is.
Well, it can't be Aaron's, no? Because it's already got almonds blossoming out of it, and it was put aside, wasn't it?
It's put into the...
Yeah. What do you say, Doc?
David is saying that the mate of Aaron was put into the Taivat, was left for an example.
For a maskeret, for a zikaron.
Don't know how it fits in the Aron. It's a bit, no?
Okay, we'll see.
But there's a midrash about the mate that came back from Breishit, and it went all the way from Adam down to
Vedic. Which mate was that? Was that Moshe's mate or Aaron's mate? That was Moshe's mate. Okay. So let's take a look here. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Hoshev es mate aron lifnei ha'edus lemishmeres li'os lifnei meri utchalt lunasa me'olai v'lo yamus. So we have the parasha of mate aron. Now what I want to study with you today is an insight of the Tzofnas Paneach, which you'll see on number 8, okay? And you'll see it again in number 9. And I want to, you know, I am familiar with the Tzofnas Paneach. I don't look it up on a regular basis. So I want to thank here Rabbi Daniel Glatstein. Have you heard of him? Anyway, so he's a Talmud Chacham in Queens, New York, where I spent a few years, and he put together these two pieces from the Tzofnas Paneach. Now, who was the Tzofnas Paneach?
It's a parish on the Rambam, isn't it?
Correct. And do you remember who authored it? Harvey, do you remember? First of all, you should know that Tzofnas Paneach is a description of whom in Tanakh?
Yosef.
Correct. And the author of the Tzofnas Paneach, he borrowed that phrase because his name was Yosef. His last name was Rosan, or Rosen, and he was the Rogachev. He came originally from a town, a small town in Lithuania called Rogachev, and already at a young age he was a child prodigy, a tremendous genius. And they called him the Rogachev. That name stuck, even though he spent most of his life in a different city, also in Lithuania, called Dvinsk. And he was a contemporary of Rabbi Meir Simcha Mitvinsk that we've covered many times, we've mentioned many times, the Meshech Chochma, the Ar Samach.
Emek Chochma. Emek Chochma.
I don't remember him. That I don't remember. But anyway, the Rabbi Simcha, he was from Dvinsk, and the Rogachev, the Tzofnas Paneach, was from Dvinsk.
They were both
Tonin. Well, if you ask the Rogachev, there was only one who was a Gaon.
I said Tonin.
Oh, I thought you said Gaonim, yeah.
Tonin.
Both Gaon. Okay. So the Rogachev had a great deal of admiration for Rabbi Simcha, to the extent in which at his funeral the Rogachev was the main speaker, and he said about Rabbi Simcha, what a terrible tragedy, he just began to understand Torah. That's what he said about Rabbi Simcha. In any event, so we're going to see these two pieces of the Tzofnas Paneach. Now, in order to appreciate the Tzofnas Paneach and his insight, we need to get a principle from Taros. You know that the Shas, of course, is divided into 6 parts, and the part that we know the least about is called Taros. And within Taros is one part that's a little bit more familiar to us, that's called Mikvos, because Mikvos is still relevant to us even today. And the Mishnah presents a machlokas here between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosef. You'll see that on the bottom right. And we're going to see how the Rama paskins in Mikvos, based on this machlokas, this controversy in the Mishnah in Mikvos. So we'll start with the Rama and then go back to the Mishnah. That makes it a little easier for us to understand. And the Rama says, this is Perek Tes Mehilchus Mikvos, that notfim shel cheresh chaloka Variamayim nischolim v'yardin olev arehen ksherim kol dover shemakabel tuma v'afilu midivrei sofrim ein maschilin bo. So now what's happening is you have waters of a mikvah, and you want to draw those waters with a kli, with a utensil, from one place to another. And that's called maschilin. Maschilin is to cause zochalin. Zochalin is when the waters rush from here to there. How are you, David Shmuel, today?
Yeah, I'm good.
No. So far, he's doing okay. We like him. We appeal to all ages here.
He brings down the average age a little.
Well, a little bit. Right?
That's
why we want to keep him. We don't want to give him up.
He heard you mention Elijah.
Yeah, he likes the rugged show. So in any event, the question here is the following. This utensil that's used to draw the mikveh water from one place to another, there's plenty of water in the mikveh, so we're not worried about the mikveh being depleted, but we're worrying about filling up another mikveh, so we'll have a second mikveh. And the problem is that paradoxically, the kli, this vessel itself, this utensil which you're using, is a dovar makabel tuma. It itself is susceptible to tuma. And that's why Rabbi Yossi, if you take a look in the Mishnah, he writes, "Kol dovar shu makabel tuma ein maschilin bo." If you have a utensil which is going to draw the water from place to place, and that utensil itself is makabel tuma, it's susceptible to receiving how do we say tuma in English? There used to be a word for it, the contamination, impurity. So that itself should not be used as a vessel to draw the water. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yehuda has a different opinion, and he says it really doesn't matter that much. But the Rambam Paskins like the Shita of Rabbi Yossi, which means that a Dovar HaMakabel Tuma is a maschilin bo. So if the Kli itself is susceptible to Tuma, then you can't use it as a utensil to draw the water. Now, you have to know that in terms of Kalim, there are two categories of kelim. There's what's called clay adoma, which means clay or china or stone. Any of those, we'll call them stoneware. That's a dovar she'eino makabel tuma. And therefore, you could be mazchil with a makel. Let's say a makel, a mate is now a kli, right? And you want to use it to draw the water. Again, that would have to require some miraculous... of course, the makel itself is not a receptacle, so how does it draw the water? But let's say it's the utensil which... the agent which causes the movement of the water.
It's a conduit.
A conduit, excellent, conduit. And this conduit is not makabel tuma if it's made of stone. But on the other hand, if it's made of eights of wood, that's called kliates. And kliates are makabel tuma. So from Rabbi Yossi's perspective, and the Rambam Paskins like Rabbi Yossi, the only way that I could allow water to go from here to there and maintain the purity of the water without it being makabel tuma is by using something that's made of stone or the like, as opposed to a utensil that's made of wood. Now, what does this have to do with Parshas Chukas? So that's what we want to see here in the Rogachov. The Rogachov in Sofnas Patech, he says the following. Ha-hevdel shebein mateu, the difference between his mate, his staff, who's his in this case?
Moshe Rabbeinu
is correct. Ha-makel shel Moshe Rabbeinu, lazet to the other makel, shall Aaron HaKohen who, and what's the difference? Shall Mate HaMakil shall Moshe Rabbeinu Hoya shall min Dover Chazak. He's quoting our Rashi, and Rashi identifies it as Snapirin Vatsur Nivka Milafanov. So Rashi in Parshas Bashalach says that when Moshe hit the, you know, hit the rock, he was able to crack the rock in half such that the water started flowing. And he was able to use his own mata for that, because how could wood break a stone? Right? Wood break a stone? The answer is because Moshe's mata was made of what? Of snapirin. And snapirin was powerful enough, strong enough, durable enough to break stone.
Sapphire.
Correct. The ilu makelo, mateu shel aron akohen, hoy shel eitz. So it makes absolute sense that back in Parshas Bishalach, when Moshe was commanded to hit the stone, that he, which mate was he going to use? Which would be the powerful mate to break the stone?
Snapirin.
It would be, right, which of the two mates? You're right, Snapirin, you're right, but which mate? Is it Moshe or Aaron?
Moshe,
correct? Now we fast forward to Parshas Chukas. Here Moshe Rabbeinu is not going to hit the stone, but rather he's meant to speak to the stone. So what does the Rogachev want to say?
His mati was the one that became a psycho, or whatever it was. That was Moshe's mati.
I think so, But not on a permanent basis, it was, right? It came back to being Snapirin.
So and therefore, it wasn't a wood mati.
It was not made of wood, it was made of stone. Rashi identifies that Snapirin, which Harvey identifies as sapphire, right? So you have a riot from Harvey. I can't disagree with him because it sounds like he's right.
Was the Luchot a Brit made from the same substance?
Is that relevant for us today, David? Because if it's not, you're just going to distract me and then I'll never get to the punchline. All right. So when we get to Luchos HaBris, remind me of your kasha, write me an email, and I'll try to figure it out. Okay? So Moshe Rabbeinu, we're okay, David? Because I can't answer all your questions. I just knew
that Luchos HaBris was made from Saffron.
If I could figure out this Rogachev, I'll be very happy. Says the Rogachev. Moshe Rabbeinu Pirish is Divrei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Elov, Sh'omar Lo, Kach Es HaMate VeHakel Es HaEda. Now notice that in our Pasuk here, which is Pasuk Ches, that's at the beginning of your handout, if you have the handout, it says HaMate, and HaMate sounds like Hey Ayidia, the Mate, like the most powerful Mate. That's how Moshe understood it. V'hakel es ha'eda es aron el'chicha v'dibartem os aleinem en os ha'memov sh'akavona hi l'mateu shal aron achiv. Why would the word ha-mate, the strong, powerful mate, refer to the mate of Aaron? And the answer is, mikevon shaloshon shenemar lo ho'yekach es ha-mate behei ha'yidia, the most powerful, outstanding mate. Kibavur, he says, in many places we find, and you know, in the next piece of the Rogachev, he'll prove this from many places, that the hey is always a hey ayidia, which means something miyuchad, something special. Like in the Pasuk in Vayikra, Perek Vav, it says over there, V'arach oleh ha-ha-olah, and we'll see that there's a sugim psachim, that the hey of ha-olah means the famous outstanding olah, which is called the olah rishon, or whatever that means. And therefore, what is the mata with a capital hey? Hey ayadiyah. Hinei beparshas Korach, in the very previous part of Perek, here in Korach, it says, Matev shel Aaron is miyuchad. The special matter that's going to be set aside for all generations to come is Matev shel Aaron. And the Pasuk itself says, Hoshev es mata Aaron lifnei ha'edus. So the one that's going to be placed in front of the Aaron is going to be the mate of Aaron. And that we saw in Pasuk Chafhei back in the previous parasha. Says the Rogachev, ube'emes, but in truth, haya kavanas HaKadosh Baruch Hu mate shel Moshe Rabbeinu. In other words, even though Moshe Rabbeinu thought that the mate that was the intention of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the mate of Aaron, Moshe thought, mistakenly, that... Did I say it the wrong way around? What I meant to say was, let me just go over that last sentence. Even though Moshe Rabbeinu mistakenly thought that the matah that Hashem had in mind was the matah of Aaron, okay, now I got it right, but really in truth, what matah did HaKadosh Baruch Hu have in mind? It was the matah of Moshe. V'im kein, lo haya yachol Moshe Rabbeinu likaneis lifnai v'lifnim lakachas es mateu shel Aaron. Now, I think what the Rogachev is assuming here, if I read him correctly, is that since the Luchos HaEdus were housed in the Aron, and the Aron was located in what we call the Kodesh Kadoshim, and since Aron was specifically appointed as what? The Kohen Gadol, it was Aron and only Aron who could enter in and remove the Mateh from the Kodesh Kadoshim. Now this is very interesting because on the one hand, Moshe Rabbeinu was of the impression that which matah was he meant to take? The matah of Aaron. But on the other hand, he, Moshe Rabbeinu, did not have the ability, he didn't have the access to the matah of Aaron.
Why would he think it was the matah of Aaron?
Because it was the matah of Aaron that was meant to have inherent status.
Firstly, the pasuk says take the matah, and then it says take Aaron. So the mashmos of the pasuk is that it was the matah Moshe.
I don't know, because of the sequence.
Yeah, kach es ha-mate, period.
Again, the Rogachev is building on the hey of ha-mate.
Okay.
And which means that we just learned just in the previous parasha that the matah of Aaron was meant to be separated and designated for all generations to come.
That was the matah.
Correct? and that would make it the matzah. So that's how he's building. Building the case.
That's the world's notion of matzah.
All right. We're going to soon see that Moshe's matzah actually has an advantage, and that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it would be very paradoxical that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would command Moshe, and that's how Moshe misunderstood it, to take the matzah of Aaron, when Moshe Rabbeinu technically did not have access to the matzah of Aaron, because it was in the Kodesh Kadosh, and he had no right to go in there. Maybe it was a special dispensation, Moshe thought, to allow him to get access to the matzah of Aaron.
But I was thinking along the same line, Aaron had the right of access, but only at a designated time.
Right.
And this was not Yom Kippur, so...
No.
Now you're getting into a whole issue. The Gaon of Vilna is of the opinion that the Kohen Gadol could go in the whole year round. But I don't want to confuse you. That's a shear unto itself.
Can I just say, what is the whole story of the Matiyah? He was supposed to speak to the Rav, so what did he need a stick for?
That's an excellent question. In fact, you should know that the Kli Yakar and many other Mefarshim are of the opinion that the reason why Moshe was confused here is because why would Hashem tell him to take the matzah if he's only speaking to the seller? Not only that, says the Kli Yakar, in the previous round, which is back in Parashas B'Shalach, Moshe was commanded to hit the matzah. And this all fits in beautifully into Moshe's understanding here, where which matzah did Moshe think he had in mind? Well, if it's the old matzah, meaning my matzah, Moshe's matzah, then why did Hashem say ha matzah? And why did Hashem say v'dibartem el hasela? It should have been as it was in the first round, to take Moshe's matzah, which is very powerful, v'kisem el hasela. So everything seems to fit into place here to lead Moshe Rabbeinu to this mistaken conclusion that the ha matzah here is the matzah of Aaron. Where I both say, let's hold off our questions because the Rugachev is very profound, and until we get through it, you know, I'm still. I was really tempted. I have a whole shiur prepared on Korach, which I didn't give. You know, it's like Nova. You know the phrase in Chazal, Nova, Novi Shekavash Es Nuvoso. You know, when you receive a prophecy and you're dying to pass it on. You know, but for some reason you can't. So what I had to do is, because I didn't want to disappoint anyone, I thought Michael was going to be, he's very makpid that I should start the next week's parasha. It was very difficult to make that transition overnight, especially when you bomb out after speaking three times, and on Motzi Shabbos you fall asleep. Because most people get off on Shabbos. My heaviest work day is on Shabbos. You know. All right. Umosif. Shekol zeh hoysa machmas anova shel Moshe v'in shechoshav sheshal Aaron hu muvchar Yosef mishalom. In other words, when you ask the question, what motivated Moshe, or what caused Moshe to come to this mistaken conclusion that HaKadosh Baruch had in mind the matzah of Aaron, you have to answer that motivational question on two different levels. On one level of intellectual, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu had various reasons to believe that it's HaMatah, it must be Aaron's matzah, and if Hashem is not telling to hit the matzah, why do I have to bring my matzah? That's on one level. That's what I call the intellectual level, cerebral. You know, he came to the conclusion that it should be Aaron's matzah. But the Rugachev goes a step further. On an emotional level, Moshe Rabbeinu emotionally could not imagine that at this great moment, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, after having established for once and forever that Aaron is the Kohen Gadol, and the matzah of Aaron is what proves and demonstrates that Aaron is the Kohen Gadol, now HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to tell him to take his matzah, Moshe Rabbeinu's matzah. That didn't fit into Moshe Rabbeinu's psyche, because he was the Adav Mikol Adam, and he thought humbly, it must be, the, you know, if this great moment has to take place in history, which matzah would be used? Not my matzah, but rather Aaron's matzah. Umosif od, she'im hayu medaber al asela hayotzi mayim lohoysa kol baya hilchatit. He says the following, that Moshe Rabbeinu would have made a good decision, a very valid judgment, to speak to the rock rather than hit the rock. And why is that? Because he would circumvent a halachic problem. But by hitting the rock with his makel, So we have a halachic issue. However, he says the following: Mikevan shehika al hasela im maklo shel Aaron hakohen shehoisa shel eitz. If Moshe Rabbeinu in his havamin, if we call it that, is correct, that he was commanded to take the matav Aaron, which is made of what? Wood. That's called a davar makabel tuma. Zego reim lebaya hilchatit. As we're going to see soon in the mission that we've already seen as an introduction, that's going to create a halachic issue because that's going to cause
tumah,
the impurity, the tuma of the mayim. Why? Ki are alocha hikar Rabbi Yosi b'mikvos. The Rambam codifies the halacha like Rabbi Yosi. Dovashu makabel tuma ein maschilin bo. So this whole process of drawing the water out of the stone was called maschilin. And with regard to maschilin, drawing water, the Mishnah says quite clearly, according to Rabbi Yosi, and that's how the Rambam accepts it, that if it's a davar makabel tuma, then you can't use that to be maschilin because that's going to engender tuma. And therefore, according to Moshe Rabbeinu's calculation, we have here a serious halachic problem, because Moshe Rabbeinu thinks that it's the matav Aaron that's going to be used, and that's going to be a process of maschilin. Well, that's a problem.
Okay.
So Moshe Rabbeinu, on the one hand, is inclined to think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded him to take the matav, which is the matav Aaron, and yet the conclusion that Moshe Rabbeinu came to is based on, number one, the anava, the humility of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what misled him. And number two, it's misleading because if Moshe Rabbeinu is correct, then we're going to have a serious halachic problem. But again, that's only if I assume that Dibur El HaSeli, so that's what we have to analyze, because after all, Moshe Rabbeinu was commanded to speak to the Seli. Yotzeim kach shall yidei shehika Moshe Rabbeinu l'vasham al hasela b'maklo shel Aaron hakohen l'vasham shaisa shel eitz shemekabel tuma. Again, I'm reading this quickly because I think most of us have the flow of it, if you pardon the pun. V'ein amayim nitharim, then it wouldn't generate mayim tahorim. V'amayim Shebemayan nifsalu. No, it's water coming out of a spring. If they are drawn by a davar makabel tuma, in this case by a mata that's made of eitz, which is mata aron, that's going to passel the mikvah of the mayan. Imkein, and therefore, kol hashana adzman sheovru bnei Yisrael seyardein lo hoya lahem makom tvila. Now, keep in mind that this episode of the Mei Meriva happened early in the 40 years in the desert. Now, for 40 years, the Jewish people need access to a mikvah, to a mayon of tefillah to be metarneh. And therefore, what we're stuck with is a situation where a woman who is tmei or baila, meaning she's a nida, she cannot go to mikvah because the mayim were nifsalu, were completely disqualified by the process of drawing the water with the mate of Aaron. Because again, what did Moshe Rabbeinu do with this mate? He hit the rock. He didn't speak to the rock. Again, why he didn't speak to the rock is a different question. But self, at the end of the day, he took the rock. He took the staff, and he, how do you say, smote the rock? Is there such a word? And he smote the rock. If he smotes the rock, then it's called Zochlin, Maschilin. And he was using which matah? What did he mistakenly think? The wrong one. He took the matah of Aaron, which is Kliates. And now it comes out, according to the Rogachov, since we pass like Rav Yossi, Moshe Rabbeinu caused a psul to disqualify the mikvah of Tara for 40 years in the Midbar. That's called Mei Meriva. Why is it called Mei Meriva? Because imagine if a woman can't go to mikvah, that's not going to generate harmony in the house, you know, between a husband and a wife. She can't go to mikvah. And he quotes the Gemara Masech the Shabbos, Shashon Bais told him betfilas Yishma Mei Mikvah Tara. That when we, you know, this is true for fundraising. If you raise money for a mikvah, I don't know if anyone here ever raised money for a mikvah. I didn't, but I know that in the neighborhood where I was brought up with the Syrian Jews, you know, we're raising money for a mikvah. It was unbelievable. There's a very great Syrian citadel of a bastion of on Ocean Parkway, if anybody knows Brooklyn. So there, the Ocean Parkway is lined with Syrian shuls, and one of them is called Shari Zion. I walked by at the time they were building the mikveh for Shari Zion, there was a page, this is many years ago, when $25,000 was worth something. And the lowest donation on the list was 25 grand.
Wow.
The highest donation was $500,000. And in between, there were plenty of donors. Now, I never got to use that mikveh. I'd love to know what it looks like. You know, it's probably the most stunning mikveh in the world. I don't know. But when they advertise, when they raise funds for a mikveh, what they basically, the banner is always going to be shown bias, because harmony, marital harmony depends upon a mikveh. You know, we can learn Torah, and that's very nice, but I don't know if that's creating marital harmony. Hopefully it is, because our wives appreciate that we learn Torah, and we share some of the Torah with them, and it's wonderful. But certainly you can understand and appreciate that a mikveh is the key of keys to Shalom Bayis. And now Moshe Rabbeinu inadvertently becomes the Gorem, according to Rabbi Yossi's Psak, of causing Tumah and disqualifying the main mikveh. Just give me one more minute, and we're almost at the punchline here. The Eloi of Moshe Rabbeinu, all the Shalom Afilu Makev and Mateu, had Moshe Rabbeinu understood the instructions properly, accurately, HaMakel Shalo Haisa Shal Evan Chazak, it was made of a very powerful sapphire, very powerful stone, Shalo Shal Eitz, HaMayim Loi Nusalim Lit Bobo, Vayashore HaShalom Bayis Velo Haisa Mariva. This would have circumvented the whole problem of Mei Mariva, because then he wouldn't have passed the mikvah. And the Rogat Shavu finishes up by saying that Hanhogas An Venusa Gdol Shal Moshe Ben Shkish Matei Shal Aaron Gdol Shal Yisrael Derech An Venusa Shal Zechari Ben Avkulis. So there's a Gemara in Perek HaNizokin about the Agadat of the Churban, and the Gemara actually points the accusing finger at Zechari Ben Avkulis, that he caused the Churban Abayis. And what brought him to this whole situation where he would cause the Churban Abayis? It was his misplaced anava. You know, humility is a great attribute, but it has to be used properly. And according to the Rogatchava, it was the, you know, there are 50 million explanations what caused the sin, what brought Moshe to sin at the Mei Meriva. Why did he hit the stone instead of speaking to the stone? And what was Moshe Rabbeinu's guilt? What is he guilty of what sin? Nobody says like the Rogatchav. The Rogatchav is very unique. The sin of Moshe Rabbeinu is causing Shalom Bayis, is undermining Shalom Bayis, marital harmony. What brought Moshe Rabbeinu to that sin, that's also, you'll only find in the Rogatchav. And the Rogatchav says it was misplaced anava. Now, how could anava be so misplaced that it would cause such terrible repercussions?
Consequences.
The answer is Zechari ben Avkulis. So what I'd like to do, and now, Doc, now the floor is yours, but I just want to say what I'd like to do, now's a good time to go, if you have to go, Jeremy, is in the balance of our discussion today, to take a look at what is misplaced humility, and what was the sin of Zechari ben Avkulis that caused the Churban Abayis. So that's the second half of today's discussion.
I also have to go.
You also have to go. Oh, I didn't know. Now I understand why you were pressing so much.
I want to say that There's a medication called Viagra, and I've been telling all my patients, and I work with Haredi patients, that this is a Kadur of Shalom Bayit, because they're very reluctant to use it, they're embarrassed about it. I said, there's nothing to be embarrassed about it, it's Shalom Bayit.
And does it have any negative, what's the word I'm looking for?
In the correct patients, no sign.
No sign.
But the Gadol, I encourage.
In fact, you don't know stock in Viagra, do you? I mean, okay. See, I'm not getting the agency.
I can just say that the price has dropped tremendously on the market.
Because the Haredim don't buy it. You know, the Haredim had such a powerful impact on the market.
It's being bought now. So the point is, I've said to the patient, this is a Kadur of Shalom Bayit. People are happier to use it. Now I've got a Makor where I can tell them about the mikveh, the story of
Bayit. Right, the whole sin of Moshe Rabbeinu. Yeah.
Just a challenge to the Rogatchava, if I can.
Okay.
The kalim in the Mishkan were all tahor, no? Didn't they all get sprinkled? Like, could we have something that was tamei in the Mishkan?
You're asking whether or not the mate of Aaron.
How could it possibly be tamei? I mean, they would have had to.
I think what we're saying is that there are two types of kalim. There are kalim with Hesek Hadas and Kalim without Hesek Hadas. What does that mean? I can't promise you that this table that we're using is not Tomei. Because I had Hesek Hadas. I walked out of the room. In the meantime, I don't know who came in and put down what, and kind of, you know, maybe a sheretz fell on the table. So that's called Hesek Hadas. It's true that certain kelim are under constant 24/7 supervision, and you can guarantee them, anyone, that that kli is tar. But for that, you need a situation of shmira, of absolute meticulous care, to make sure that no one came in contact with it. In the absence of that premise of shmira, and there was no hesek hadas, we assume that all kelim might have come in contact with people or with shrotzim, whatever it might be, that a makabel tum. And therefore, in that sense, if you have a kli eitz that came in contact with this mayon, it's a problem.
My second challenge, if something can grow out of this mata, it's like a tree. A tree could never be tamei, right? So
David, as long as it's attached to the ground. The miracle of the mata aron was, even though it was detached, it was still growing, and it's not called makabel. It's not called mechuber lekarka. Mechuber lekarka is as long as it's growing in the ground. And once it's not mechubal karka, it has a shen kli. Once it has shen kli, it's mechabal tuma, unless it's a kli evan, it's made of stone. Now, what I wanted to show you here on the left side, we still have a few more minutes, is the Gemara in Gid. Now, you remember the story of Kamtza bar Kamtza. As a result of Kamtza bar Kamtza, the
Chorban Abayis.
Right, which was the one who was insulted? It was Bar Kamtz, I think. Right. Now, I'll say it, it doesn't matter. Whoever it was, we'll call him Bar Kamtz. If I made a mistake, I will correct it another time, not now. Because it makes no difference for us. So this Bar Kamtz was so angry at the fact that he was publicly humiliated in front of the rabbis and so forth and so on. He says, I'm going to get the Jews back. And what he does is, he says that the Romans, the government is asking for, you know, that we receive a korban for them. And on his way, he took a knife and he made a slight incision in the inside of the lip of this animal. And that's called a mum. That's called a blemish. And even though it wasn't obvious to those who were carrying the animal, they found out later it was pasul mizbeach. And now the problem was, the Jews were in a very difficult scenario. Because on the one hand, you're not allowed to bring a bal mum, a blemished animal, on the Mizbeach as a carbon. But on the other hand, imagine defying the Romans, and this guy Bar Kamtza was so angry at the Jewish people, who go back and tell the Romans, look, these are rebellious Jews, they don't even want to accept your carbon and bring it on the Mizbeach. So the one who had to make the decision at that time was a fellow by the name of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulis. And he said, we can't allow bringing this carbon. It's not possible. Why? Because even if maybe we could come up with a heter, with some sort of special permissibility, but nevertheless, Yomru, the people won't know the entire background, and they're going to come to the conclusion that Bali Mumin Kraven Lagabi Mizbeach. They will mistakenly universalize from this case and assume that you could bring a blemished animal onto the Mizbeach. And Chazal didn't know what to do, because they knew that as a result of the non-bringing of this carbon, it could create a tremendous, you know, anti-Semitic result, a repercussion, and it would be defined as an act of rebellion. Sovra l'miktale, they were thinking of doing away with him, and so forth and so on. So what I want to do here is take a look at the end of the Gemara, which is in number 11. The Gemara says, Om Rabbi Yochanan, on Venuso Shel Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulis, Hechriva es Beisenu, Vesarfes Hechlenu Vigliseinu Meartseinu. So the Gemara points the accusing finger, you know, to isolate what was the cause of the Churban, on Venuso Shel Zechariah ben Avkulis. The Anova. Anova means his humility. And one of the great commentaries.
Misplaced humility.
Correct. And one of the great commentaries, which is the Maariv Chayis in number 12, wants to understand Lo Yadati. He says, I don't understand Ma, I can't read the next word, Ma Mokom it should be, I think. Hoysa Bazesh Shalo Hiniach Lekabel Karbonov Lo Hargo Hoyloshas lomar tzidkaso o chasiduso shel Rav Zechariah ben Avkulis avolo loshan an venuso.
Yeah, what's the shayach ben Avkulis here?
Correct. Where's the humility here? It's not a matter of humility. It's a matter of tzidkus. You know, he was a real chasid. You know, he was very pious. He didn't want to get into a situation where they might mistakenly understand that you could bring this carbon on the mizbeah. Why is it called an venuso? So Rashi gives one pshat, the Maratz Chayis wants to give his own pshat. That's very unusual. Maratz Chayis lived 2 centuries ago. So, well, he's arguing with Rashi. But anyway, he says that Rashi says that the word anvenuso in this context means savlenuso. Savlenuso means his tolerance.
Patience.
Okay, what has got to do with patience?
The word in the beginning is anova.
Anova, anova is not savlanut.
No, the first word, which you didn't know what it was, the first of.
Oh. Sure. So what I read is as makom, it should be anova.
Yeah.
Ma anova.
I should
have. Okay. I need a magnifying glass here in this case, or maybe I have to go to Dr. Joel to fix my glasses or my eyes or whatever it is. You know, I see that my laser surgery didn't help me. I still can't read small print, even though he promised me that he was fixing both. My farsightedness, wow, and my nearsightedness, or whatever it is. Anyway, so whatever that is. So he says, he's not so thrilled, he's not dancing with this. He says, Ulam, Lefi Adin, and please correct me here, Herb, because I see you have a very sharp vision here. He says, Lefi Adin, Hayamuta Lahakriv Balmum Bekarban. He says, in this case, we certainly would have had a halachic permission to bring this carbon because sakana l'kol Yisrael, and he quotes the sugin Yuma to prove that the kohanim in certain cases had to wear certain begadim, even though they had shatnis in it, and the reason for that is that the Torah said that for the sake of wearing big day kahuna and getting the avoda, we're going to allow shatnis. You see that sometimes for a greater good, we permit the violation of a prohibition, and certainly of a law of prohibition. I mean, to bring a balmum on the mizbech is not a chiv kares, it's not a chiv misa, and that's called es lasos lashem eferus asecha. There are certain moments in history where we have to actually defy the Torah, violate the Torah for the sake of the greater good of Klal Yisrael. And he says, take a look in the Magen Avraham and Hilchos Tzitzis, and you'll see this halacha about shatnez. V'hainu mizech hazinon t'lo ayad nachon be. What is this word here? Mine?
Bi'ene.
Okay, again. Bi'ene chazal, darko sh'rab z'chari ben avkula sh'omer yomru bali mumin kreven l'gami mizbeach muchach sh'min adin. Why were the chacham unhappy with Rav Zechariah ben Avkulis? So according to the strict letter of the law, hayu mutarim mibnei emes machus. There was a heter, there was permission here to violate the law of balmum. V'chein hayu horgim as bar kamtza, the Gemara says that they offered a suggestion to do away with bar kamtza because he was the one who was going to report back to the Romans that the Jews refused to be makriv that carbon of the kesar. And you see that also is min adin. You're not allowed to kill a Jew, but there's halacha of a rodef that if a Jew is causing the death of another Jew, or at least threatening to kill a Jew, and how much more so if here he's threatening to kill off Klal Yisrael, is Bola Hargo Hashke Mahargo. Oh, now comes Anov. Where does Anov enter into the picture? Now, let me just say a few words of introduction to this Maras Chayis, because there's a phrase in Yiddish which, I don't know, you translate it literally and it loses the whole meaning. So I don't know if it exists in any other language, and that's called Platzis. Platzis literally means shoulders. We call it broad shoulders. Platzis means that to violate the Torah and to paskin that we have to violate the Torah, to issue that psak, that verdict, is that requires great platzis, you know, wide shoulders. And you have to have a certain faith in yourself. That self-confidence, which is called in the Pasuk in Mishnah, it's called Gavol Libi B'Darkei Hashem, that I know I'm doing the right thing, even though on the surface of it seems like I'm violating the Torah. Es Asol Sashem, that requires breiter plates, as we call it, broad shoulders. The greatest, perhaps, example, and that's what we're doing here today, based on this example of breiter plates, is Rabbi Yudan Nasi. Because what are we looking at here? Mm-hmm. We're not just looking at the Chumash, right? We're looking at Rashi, and we're looking at commentaries, and the Rogachev. All that is prohibited. It's got to be Torah Shebal Peh. But Rebbe took it upon himself, Eis Lasos Lashem. He knew the Torah was going to be forgotten. The transmission of Torah orally, which, by the way, back in the day was an unbelievable phenomenon, that the Jews remembered all of the Torah from one generation to the other. But we don't have that anymore. The Jews are dispersed. They're in Golus. They hit the lowest level that you could imagine. And therefore, Rebbe had to make this permissibility. That's called breitoplates. The opposite of breitoplates is anofa, is when a person has a sense of humility. What does humility mean in this case? It doesn't mean the good humility, the positive humility of a Moshe Rabbeinu. It means misplaced or misguided humility that freezes you. And it engenders a lack of confidence. And it tells the posek, that far you can't go. Again, there are many examples of this throughout Jewish history where it required a tremendous amount of courage to violate the Torah law. He says, V'ula mipnei godol anvenuso shel rab schari ben akulis lo hiriv nafsho. He wasn't able to stimulate the power, the energy of his soul. Oz, I think, should be the next word. I'm not sure. It looks like mem, but I think it's an ayin. Oz means power and strength. Lasos pasel haloch lemaisi, couldn't paskin haloch lemaisi v'choshash, he was afraid. Sheyachshedu osa, you know, people think, oh, he's not religious, you know, he's not pious. If he was pious, how would he allow us to bring this carbon? Sheosa sheloka halocha, he went against the halocha itself. You know, I know my Rebbe, for example, took a stand on an issue and it caused him tremendous problems for the rest of his life. He decided that in our generation, women have to learn Torah Shebal Peh. And they called him a this and a that. I don't want to go into all the names. Rav Moshe Feinstein also took a psak that caused him tremendous problems about artificial insemination. And the Satmar Chevret attacked him, and he's not frum, and he can't rely on his psakim. This is Rav Moshe Feinstein. So it takes breath to play this to make that decision and issue that verdict. Rav Schari ben Avkulis didn't have.
In 23, with Chovas Simon and Ger Rebbe, when they allowed the Sereshnaya,
correct, that also took breath to places, you know, to create schools for women, which today is, you know, we take it
as a given,
you know, we take it nonchalantly. Who would question that there are Beis Yaakovs all over the place? And back in the day, to create a Beis Yaakov, you had to be a revolutionary.
Maybe it's not misplaced in Nevis. Maybe he did not have the places to make such a decision.
Yeah, but it's interesting how the Maratz Chayis accuses him. Because again, you know, you can't blame the Maratz Chayis for throwing accusations about a Jew who's described by the Gemara itself as Hichriv Esah. So if you could understand the agenda, if you will, or the position of the Maratz Chayis in attacking Rav Zecharia. He's not going to be one of our favorite people in history. Again, I feel for the guy because I understand what his problem was. He was afraid
of the Gemara. Is the description of him? What is the translation?
The Gemara says word for word, "Hirchiva es beisenu." He destroyed our bais, our Beis Hamikdash. And the Maratz Chayis says, why did he do this? He was afraid, looking over his shoulders, that they're going to accuse him of being impious. That's what the Maratz Chayis says. He says, Lo hichshiv es atzmo gadol gadol. He wasn't such a great person, and he didn't consider himself so great, that he could overcome all these accusations against him, to come to the conclusion, Leos Osa Halocha Lamaisa, Velitlos Be Horas Shah, I think it should be. Again, every time I see a mem, I automatically assume it's an I. Now, what's Horas Shah? Horas Shah means in very unique, specific crossroads in Jewish history.
Emergency rules.
But we're going to have to, right? We're going to have emergency rule. We're going to have to override the halacha. That's called Horas Shah.
Eliyahu
Bahar Carmel is an excellent example of Horas Shah.
What's this?
Eliyahu and Har Carmel was willing to be makriv in a bama outside the Beis Hamikdash when it was an Isur bama. So you weren't allowed at that point in history to do that akrov, but he did it to prove the Jewish religion. And that's called Horas Shah.
I once overruled my wife.
That's a that's really that's the serious nefesh mamish. For who ain't a roy lazeh lasos gedolos? He thought about himself that he's not He's not fit. He's not on the level of doing things that require greatness. Shelo kitora against the Torah itself. Lulitlos ki ose leman ligdor gedor lahamid peretz v'pnei yisrael amru lishon amvenuso dehainu b'meshel rotzo lamed al daito. He didn't want to be firm and courageous about his decision, and to allow that the korban could be brought, that was what caused the Churban HaBayis. The Ayin Medrash Kinos, Piska B'nei Tzion HaYikorim, meaning on the Pasuk, B'nei Tzion HaYikorim is a Pasuk, I think, in Eicha, if I'm not mistaken, Nemar Shoma V'hoya Shmo Rav Zchari Ben Avkudis Shohaya Sipek B'yadeu Limchos. He had the ability to object to those who were saying, hey, we can't bring this korban, but he didn't object to them. And therefore he sided with them and agreed that this korban should not be brought. And the Medrash in Eicha should be interpreted in the same light. But he refused to take the reins into his hand, and with a great act of courage, to Paskin that we had to bring this korban and stave off the accusation that the Jews were rebelling against Rome and basically the Churban HaBayis. And Rabosai, again, what I want to point out to you, and I don't know how many of you may have read an essay which was written in Hebrew by Rav Soloveitchik, but it was translated to English as Halachic Man, and he speaks about the rabbi. What's the ideal model of a rabbi? And he writes, the pasuk says lo soguru mipnei ish, that when a dayan, when a judge makes a decision, he's not allowed to be afraid of anyone, because it's so easy when there's a controversy that if the rough guys are on the other side and the dayan wants to paskin against them, that he'll shake and tremble. And the Torah says you're not allowed to tremble. You have to do what's right for the sake of truth, and that's tzedek tirna. And that, he said, was the paradigm of a rabbi. A rabbi has to make certain decisions, and he's going to suffer from them. And it could go, by the way, in both ways. You know, we're giving examples where the Rav has to paskin heter when it's really iser, and activate the principle of Horoshah and Eis Lasos, but it could be the other way around. Sometimes the Rav has to take a stand on an issue of Chumra, where the people want to go lekula, you know, they want to be more lenient about it. I'll give you an example. Back in the day when I was growing up, the main issue in Orthodox synagogues was the mechitza. Yeah. Now, I don't know in England if you ever saw that. Was that ever an issue? I don't know. But in America, this was gefero, because the conservatives got rid of the mechitza. And now the Orthodox, you know, had that challenge of convincing their people. Now, if you had an Orthodox shul in a neighborhood that was not particularly religious, like my father, again, today Flappers is like Borough Park, but back in the day when my father got the job as the rabbi there, you can count the Shomer Shabbos Jews on one hand. I don't even think on one hand. So for my father to fight the battle to have a mechitza against the ladies' auxiliary club, you know, and all the others, you know, who were fighting my father tooth and nail. At the end, my father got a heart attack from it, and it was the first case of open heart surgery in New York City with the Beck procedure, a very famous, notorious procedure, which I won't go into now. But you know, you fight the battle and you pay the price. It's not easy, and it requires courage. And my father's first battle in his career was in a city called Bangor, Maine, where there was a lot of shechita. And my father discovered that there were two shoftim in Bangor, Maine that were being machil nevelos and treifus. You know, he called them in. My father was fresh out of smicha, so he knew all the halachas of shechita inside out. And he tested them, and he saw that they were amaratzim, and they didn't know what they were doing. And this was at the time in America, back in the 1920s, when there was so many problems in kashrus, 1930s. So my father tried to get them out, and he lost the battle. So my father was in Bangor, Maine for 2 years. In his second year in Rabbanus, he got up on Kol Nidre night, and he said either they leave Bangor or I leave Bangor. And at the end, my father had to leave Bangor. He couldn't. They were so powerful that my father couldn't win the battle. So you see that sometimes you take a stand, you're courageous, also good in the ish, and you overcome your anova, and you do what you think is right, and then you pay the price. Nobody guarantees you that you're gonna, you know, that life is a bowl of cherries just because.
On the other hand, is that there's a philosophy which is not, you do what's right, Hashem's in charge.
Right.
So he this is an usher thing to bring in the Kohen of Mizbeah. I'm going to perform the halakha properly. And Hashem's in charge. It's not my problem.
No, but here, Joel, what we're saying is, according to Ratz Chayis, is the halakha itself, in this case, yeah, requires you to bring the Kohen.
Okay.
Do you follow what I'm saying? You're right. In other cases, maybe you can say, let's be machmir in a question of erva, of a question of nevelos and treifus, of Shabbos and observance of Shabbos.
Copying down the Torah Bal Peh. I mean, how did he have the plates to say,
That's it. That, your choice was the following. Either you break this halacha, this one halacha, Dvarim Shebal Peh, you have to have Hashem Golem B'Ksav, or you forfeit the whole deal.
Oh, you say it's in Hashem's hands.
But that's not, Joel, that's not how we operate. Again, I apologize to you because we're coming from different backgrounds, you know, and it's hard for me to, you know, convince you in 3 seconds that your whole approach is incorrect in this case. In this case, we're good friends, so I can say that. But the halacha doesn't expect you to throw the ball back into God's court. The halacha says you're faced with a certain challenge. These are the factors. Weigh them and balance them on the scale and come to a decision. You can't just say God will take care of it. That's not how we paskin. You know, we paskin based on Ein L'dayin L'mash Ein Avros, whatever he sees in front of him. And if he sees in front of him that the entire Torah is going to be forgotten, so God is going to come down from heaven and he's going to inject into every Jew's mind the entire Torah for the rest of that's not how the halacha paskin. So there are situations in which adarava, it's like Eliyahu Bar Carmel, it's Horasha, and that's how we have to paskin. You're nervous about it? They're going to accuse you of this, that, and the other thing? Lo Sogur Mivneish. You have to stand up for your princes. Okay, Rabbosai.
Thank you, Rabbosai.